Hey there, folks. Welcome to Rock and Riley Tennis, where it's all tennis, all the time. I'm James Lynn. Follow us on Twitter at Rock and Riley. That's Rock underscore and underscore Riley. And on Facebook at facebook.com/Rock and Riley Tennis. Rock and Riley Tennis podcast episode number 81 is brought to you by CareerWonder.com, the ultimate career resource site featuring video interviews of professionals from a wide array of industries. Sharing the stories, journeys, and insights about their careers and jobs at CareerWonder.com. Well, what a difference a year makes. 13 months ago, it was all about Novak Djokovic winning his 12th Grand Slam singles title and first French Open crown to complete his career Grand Slam. Djokovic was practically lapping the field at the time. He fell off a bit in the second half of 2016, eventually getting passed by Andy Murray, who finished the year ranked number one. And here we are now, three quarters of the way through the Grand Slam season in 2017. Djokovic is dealing with an arm injury and perhaps some motivation issues as he continues to try to regain his top form. Murray has also been dealing with some injuries since becoming number one in the world at the end of 2016 and has not really been able to sustain a stretch of high-quality play so far in 2017. And surprise, surprise, it's Federer and Nadal who have won the first three Grand Slams this year. Federer started out the year by winning his fifth Australian Open crown and 18th major overall. Nadal then answered by winning his 10th French Open and 15th overall Grand Slam singles title. And then last weekend, Federer responded by winning his 8th Wimbledon and 19th overall Grand Slam singles title. Now, expanding on what I talked about in podcast episodes number 72 and 80, I am curious to see what Federer does in 2018 scheduling-wise as far as the clay court season is concerned. Federer has already said he plans to play the French Open in 2018. You know, by now everyone knows that he elected to skip the clay court season this year, including the French Open, to focus on Wimbledon and the hard court season. Now, I believe it's fairly obvious now that his skipping of the French Open was a carefully calculated decision in his quest to reach 20 Grand Slam singles titles in 2017. Relatively speaking, I look at 20 Grand Slam singles titles similar to when Pete Sampras's 14 was the gold standard. At that time, Sampras was, for the most part, considered the greatest of all time. Certainly, no disrespect to Aussie greats Roy Emerson, who won 12 Grand Slam singles titles, or Rod Laver, who won 11. And by the way, Laver remains the only man since the start of the Open era in 1968 to have won the calendar Grand Slam. Laver actually did it twice, once in 1962 and again in 1969. Now, even though Sampras never won the French Open, his 14 Grand Slam singles titles were, at the time, considered to be out of reach. Thus, Sampras was usually one of two players, the other being Laver, always in that discussion of greatest of all time. Now, as I've alluded to in previous podcasts, there is a part of me that believes Federer skipping the French Open this year to focus on Wimbledon and the US Open was a proactive effort to try to put some distance between himself and Nadal in terms of Grand Slam singles titles won. As I mentioned in podcast episode 72, I felt it was a clear sign of Federer's confidence that he felt he could win Wimbledon and the US Open and reach 20 majors this year. And he just won Wimbledon, so he now has 19, one more to go. As it stands now, the gap between Federer's 19 and Nadal's 15 is more than wide enough for there to be no doubt about Federer being the greatest of all time. That said, as I discussed in podcast 72, if Nadal wins another Australian Open, he will have won 16 majors, which will put him within sniffing distance again of Federer's 19. More importantly, winning a second Australian Open will complete the career Grand Slam twice over for Nadal, and that will be a big deal in my opinion. That along with the dominant 23-14 head-to-head record versus Federer. And one additional very important point to consider as it pertains to Federer and Nadal in the greatest of all time discussion, is the fact that Nadal has beaten Federer on Federer's best surface, grass, to win Wimbledon. Meanwhile, Federer has not beaten Nadal on Nadal's best surface, clay, to win his lone French Open title. Anyway, a little food for thought there. On a related note, as good as Nadal looked this year in winning his 10th French Open title, folks, he's not the same Nadal who won his previous 9 French Open titles. He has lost some quickness and has had to change his court position and, consequently, make some adjustments to how he constructs points. These days, Nadal looks physically bigger and stronger. He's going for bigger serves and looking to end points a little more quickly than in years past. Come the 2018 French Open, Nadal will be another year older and have another year of mileage on those knees. Don't get me wrong, on clay, Nadal at 90% is probably still good enough to be king of clay. But let's not forget that for several years, it was Federer who was the best clay court player in the world, not named Nadal. Federer's newfound mindset and confidence in his backhand, combined with a Nadal whose mobility and forehand may be potentially a tad less potent, well, that will make for a very interesting matchup next year on clay if they both can stay healthy. And while we're on the topic of Federer's backhand, you know, over the years, people have talked a lot about Federer's backhand being weak. You know, that's a crock in my view. I've always believed that the totality of Federer's backhand, from the flat drives, the topspin, to dizzying variety of slices and chips, really puts his backhand among the game's best wings since probably around 2005. And don't get me wrong, those first few years when Federer first came onto the scene, yes, he relied a lot on his forehand and played primarily what I call a young buck athletic type of game. His backhand was largely one-dimensional at the time, as he had yet to figure out how to employ the variety of shots he was capable of hitting off of that wing. That said, you know, consider this, the only player who has ever been able to break down Federer's backhand consistently is Nadal, and that has been predominantly on clay. Something to point out is that Nadal's victories versus Federer at the 2008 Wimbledon and 2009 Australian Open finals, well, it was actually Federer's forehand that came up short at many crucial moments, not his backhand. And don't get me wrong, has Federer improved his backhand? Of course he has. But anyone who has followed Federer all these years knows that he has always been able to hit backhands on the rise and through the court, whether cross-court or up the line. The biggest difference with his backhand in 2017, and overall game for the past 3 years or so for that matter, has been a greater willingness on his part to take the initiative earlier in the rally. But again, he has always been able to hit these backhands on the rise, yes, even with the slightly smaller head of his previous rackets. To me, the biggest influence on his backhand has been his coach, Ivan Ljubicic. I remember watching many Ljubicic matches during his playing days. Ljubicic's best shot was the flat backhand on the rise, cross court and or up the line. And by the way, while we're giving credit where it's due, this more aggressive mindset is essentially a continuation of what Stefan Edberg helped reignite in the Federer game in the 2 years prior to Ljubicic joining Federer. In my view, Ljubicic deserves a lot of credit for Federer's new backhand. As for attributing Federer's convincing wins over Nadal at Indian Wells in Miami, along with the epic five-setter in Australia earlier this year to Federer's new backhand, this should be viewed in the proper context. You know, again, yes, Federer's backhand has improved. But in my opinion, the effectiveness of his backhand against Nadal this year has as much to do with some of the steam that has come off of Nadal's forehand and foot speed as it does Federer's improved backhand, which, by the way, is why I look forward to a possible Federer-Nadal matchup on clay in 2018. Another factor in Federer's success versus Nadal this year is that Nadal has to hit a lot more backhands these days. I had mentioned to a friend of mine before the Australian Open final this year that Federer was going to be able to find Nadal's backhand more than ever because Nadal's court position is now a couple of steps further away from his backhand corner than in previous years. And I've talked about this at length in previous podcasts. Nadal no longer has the quickness to be able to cover that wide forehand as consistently, so he can't stand or position himself in that backhand corner anymore. He now has to stand a couple of steps closer to the center stripe, which means he has to hit a lot more backhands. And let's face it, while Nadal has an excellent two-handed backhand, it is not at the elite level of the Djokovic's, Murray's, or Nishikori's backhands. An elite talent like Federer is going to make Nadal step up on that weaker wing. At this point, Federer is hands down the greatest of all time. There is no question about that today. All I'm saying is that it may not be as indisputable 12 to 18 months from now if it's Nadal, if Nadal is the one who ends up completing the career Grand Slam twice over and Federer still only has one French Open title. Now, I'm a huge Federer fan, but if you're going to be considered the greatest of all time, I believe you have to have outperformed your greatest rivals on the greatest stages and so on. Even as it stands currently, while the head-to-head comparison of achievements versus Nadal is certainly in Federer's favor, it is not as lopsided as many people believe it to be. but certainly 19 versus 15 is a big enough gap for now. Regarding Novak Djokovic, you know, I hope Djokovic gets his due when all is said and done, whether or not he's able to return to dominant form in the future. You know, if you think about it, for the better part of 5 or 6 years while Federer and Nadal were still in their primes, Djokovic had pretty darn good success against both of them on the biggest stages. Plus, and this is the real kicker here, for me, it was Djokovic who really figured out and put the blueprint out there on how to beat both Nadal and Federer. On Nadal, while everyone was trying to hit to Nadal's backhand all those years, it was Djokovic who exposed the vulnerability of Nadal's extreme court position, the fact that he was always camped out on the backhand corner of the court to try to run around and hit big forehands. Djokovic showed everyone that Nadal was beatable if you could play to his forehand, stretching him wide on that wing to elicit a short or pedestrian forehand reply that was more easily attackable. Regarding Federer, it was a similar story. It was Djokovic who exposed that pulling Federer wide to his forehand consistently would pay dividends over the course of a match. The come-from-behind epic five-set semifinal against Federer at the 2010 US Open comes to mind as an important moment for when that blueprint gelled. As I've mentioned in previous podcasts, it has actually been Federer's forehand that has come up short at some of the big moments over the years. Versus Djokovic, a couple of examples that come to mind are the 2015 Wimbledon and US Open finals, where, again, it was Federer's forehand and not the backhand that actually broke down or failed him at critical moments of the match. Obviously, saying and knowing what to do is easy. Executing it is another story. But Djokovic has done it successfully against arguably the two greatest players ever in men's tennis. He has winning head-to-head records against Federer and Nadal. Djokovic is 23-22 versus Federer and 26-24 versus Nadal. Djokovic has won 12 Grand Slam singles titles and is, again, one of only 8 men to have completed the career Grand Slam. Djokovic certainly deserves to be considered as one of this era's best players. The past 10 to 12 years or so have been a golden era in men's tennis. No one knows for sure how much longer the big three will be around and playing at this incredible level. I mean, they are all over 30 years old now. Federer will celebrate his 36th birthday next month. Nadal is 31 and Djokovic is 30. You know, it's funny, barring injury, despite being the oldest of the three, Federer may be the one who is still playing at an elite level a couple of years from now, because the efficiency and elegance of his style of play is far less taxing physically than Nadal's or Djokovic's. In any case, all we can do in the meantime is enjoy and appreciate these great and truly special athletes for as long as we have them. For me, it's exciting to know that these next couple of years or so will likely go a long way in ultimately shaping the discussion regarding the greatest of all time for many, many years to follow. Well, that's all for this episode, folks. Thanks for joining us at Rock and Rally Tennis. Please subscribe to our podcast at rockandrallytennis.com. I'm James Lynn. See you next time.